All right, hey Corey.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hey buddy. So, Rick, are you actually say something? Where are you from, Corey? What agency, if you can?
Yeah, town of Hamburg, police out of Buffalo, New York.
Okay, Buffalo. Hey Rick, can you hear it loud and clear?
Yeah, I can hear
Between
him.
two mics? Okay. All right, cool. All right, what you got? And I have a feeling it's about the DeBoer factors.
Yeah, that's correct. So at founded suspicion, we have the right to hold individuals. But what we're trying to disseminate is what is the difference between federal arrest and founded suspicion? Did the state restrict the Fourth Amendment in founded? And if so, is New York arrest comparative to federal arrest?
All right. I'm gonna take my best shot at this because actually haven't answered a DeBoer question in a while. Okay. And
Okay.
but I do, I think I have some good feedback for you. So first of all, I want to start with Mike. Mike, do you know what the DeBoer factors in New York are?
Gosh, it's one of those. I'm going through my little notes here of like legal words that I have to use so I can communicate with you in life. And I know it's in there,
Yeah.
but it's not coming to mind right now.
Okay. So actually, this is actually kind of cool for those officers who are not from New York. New York is the only state that I'm aware of that has a four-tiered system for contacting people. Okay. And Corey, you tell me if I say anything that's basically like not true, do not hesitate to be like, no, actually, we don't do that here anymore, or that's how we do business, whatever.
Yes,
So,
sir.
okay. So let's start off with knowledge for everybody that can use. In every state besides New York, there's basically three encounters, right? You got consent, you got reasonable suspicion, you have an arrest. In New York, because they don't like their cops, except Corey, they like him. Because they don't like their cops, they like to make things a little more complicated. And DeBoer comes from a case called DeBoer. Is that, I maybe you know that from the academy, Corey, but I think the case is called DeBoer, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And it's DeBoer. Okay. So,
DeBoer. Go.
yeah, so DeBoer. So here's what they have basically in a nutshell. They have I think they call it a mere inquiry. What's the first factor? Mere inquiry?
The right to request information.
The right to request information. Now, the next one is your founded suspicion, correct?
That's correct.
The wait, did I have, what's the what okay, so we oh no,
Is
consensual
it the
encounter.
common right law of
Well, a
inquiry?
purely consensual, okay, a purely consensual encounter is the fourth one, right? But in New York, though, here's what's weird about this. It's actually two kind of weird. In New York, a truly consensual encounter is, in my view, by the courts, it's not for criminal activity. It's like literally like talking to the pizza guy about how his day went. When you actually have when you are intending to actually get criminal information from a person, they call that, again, mere inquiry.
Right to stop and detain.
Right. Okay. I always mere inquiry. And then you have the founded suspicion, then you have the arrest. Okay. So a consensual counter is what they really mean, is like truly not a criminal thing. The next one is this mere inquiry thing. You are not allowed to like do much with that. Unless you have reason, unless you have this founded suspicion. You can't, I mean, man, what, right, Corey? You can't even, I don't think you can ask for consent.
Had founded suspicion?
No, with mere, let's just mere inquiry thing. The first,
Oh,
the,
yeah. No, you can't.
and
Nope.
you and you cannot, and one thing I do know, Mike, and this is why it's kind of odd, is that you cannot accuse, you can't even intimate that people are involved in criminal activity at that level. So it's
That's
like,
correct.
right, it's very strict. And you basically, you're kind of, I like to say you're on pins and needles in New York. Like you
Yes.
want to talk to people and be like, hey, hopefully I can get something here. Like maybe the guy's involved in criminal activity. But if you start treating him anywhere near like a criminal, that's why you can't ask for consent, because when you ask for consent, it basically sends a signal to reasonable people that they are suspected of a crime. You can't do that under this mere inquiry stuff. Now, okay, huh?
What about if the question, the response on the ones you can ask are leading you to suspicion?
And
You can
then just
continue,
play it
right?
cool. That's right. Say, hey, how you doing today, man? What brings you to what brings you to Times Square, or what brings you to our fine town today? And you suspect that they may be involved in criminal activity, right? But you can't say it. You gotta kind of be very cool about it. And they start, oh, I'm going to this the this the Walmart, whatever, And Walmart's a bad example because they're probably open tomorrow, but that place is closed. Oh, I'm waiting for the bus to come, but the buses are stop running. That's the type of stuff that can start leading you to reasonable suspicion. Now, Corey, to answer your question now at this level, is your RAS the same as the federal? Yeah, I do. That's what I teach. You know, I think that you, I think it's very similar. Now, I will tell you that the rules are, there are some rules that are different. For example, unprovoked flight is not the same in New York, right, as it is in Illinois and other states, meaning you have to have more than high crime area and evasion, right? Unprovoked flight in New York. I know that some other rules are more strict, like some more specific scenarios are stricter than the Supreme Court. But as far as what reasonable suspicion is, which is a moderate chance of illegal activity, I think the answer is yes. And James actually gave you the cases, People versus DeBoer. It's an old case too. Oh, James, I wish you would send it to everybody, please. Resend it, because you only sent it to me, the host and panelists. Resend that, please, and send it to everybody. But I think, look, if anybody else is on here, James, are you a New York cop? If there's any other officers that have anything else to add to this, please do. I am no way an expert in these DeBoer factors. I do have a book for New York, and okay, cool. Thanks, James. I do have a book out of New York, and I do obviously talk about the DeBoer factors, but it can get a little dicey. But it's kind of confusing, and I wish that they would get rid of it. But of course, it's New York, and they're gonna make things harder, not looser. But that's how I teach it right now.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome, man. Thank you. All right, buddy. Yeah.
1976.
1976. Nice.
Interesting.
Okay, cool. Thanks, James. I appreciate you, man. Hey, so who else has a question? We would love to answer questions. I think that's great. I'm trying to be as helpful as I can. I also don't want to claim that I'm an absolute expert in, I wrote a book on DeBoer factors, but as you can kind of tell, they're a little weird. Anybody else have a question? So, ask any search and seizure question, please. That's why we're here. And if we don't, if we and by the way, if we do not know, we will totally just make it up. All right. So,
We will give you
Patrick,
an answer.
let's see, Pat. If I'm not talking, okay, Patrick. Well, can you come on? Can you come on the show? Can we just turn on your mic? No camera, just microphone. Can we try that? And it helps the show, gives people. Oh, are we recording? Yeah, we're recording. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Patrick, yay or nay?
Close the blinds on the window back here.
Yeah. No, Rick is like, ask it on the air, you know. Hold on. No, I have to do it, Patrick. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Okay. Now you'll see it come up on your screen.
Oh, there we go. Oh, there he goes. You there, Patrick?
Takes a couple seconds. You know how it is.
Yeah.
Unless he's like you.
Technical wizard.
Shane, I'll take a made-up question. Let's handle Patrick first. Is it not working, Patrick?
Is it working now?
Hey,
There
buddy.
we are.
Hey, Patrick, where are you out of, man? And what agency are you with, if you can say that?
California, El Cerrito.
Oh, nice, man. All right. So I'm an expert in California case law. So ask the question.
So basically, my question was on a traffic stop, there's a driver and a passenger. The driver is the registered owner of the vehicle. And you conduct the records check and you find out the driver has a warrant. And you arrest the driver for the warrant, but you don't see any plain view and nothing like that. And usually, like search incident to arrest, you can search the person and all that. But regarding a warrant, can you search the car before, releasing it to the passenger?
Now, just out of curiosity, you want to kind of do this as a little like a matter of routine, right? There's no specific, you don't have probable cause. If you did, we'd talk about the motor vehicle exception.
I mean,
And
just because, go ahead, I'm sorry.
no, go ahead.
I mean, just because on a warrant, like there's just your only crime is just a warrant. So it's like, but they can be a gun in our car or anything else, So.
Could also be a dead body in the car. Could be a dead body in Mike's car. But
Exactly.
that might be a what if though, right?
Right.
So look, I have your answer. You know, I you know, I'm I've seen this time and time again. Well, actually, before I give my 2 cents, what about your 3 cents, Mike? What do you think about this? You know, and what case law would you think would apply to this for Patrick?
Well, if let's just talk about the search incident rest of the car is kind of where I want to start. And I think there's still a lot of leftover in policing out there that you arrest somebody, you get the car, and you don't anymore. That's been was overturned. What was it?
2009.
So we're talking about Gant is the case that we Arizona versus Gant that took this idea of you arrest somebody and you get the car, you get to search the car. And was it Rodney Gant had a suspended license, I believe. Traffic stop, suspended license. They arrest him. They put him in
a warrant. In a warrant.
Right. Yeah. Warrant. Put him in the back of the patrol car. Search his car because he had the warrant and he was under arrest. And they find a bunch of dope in the car. Taking their arrest on that. And Belton? What was the original case? It was
the original case was Belton that they overturned him.
Right. They overturned
Overturned. They didn't say that. But go on.
Right. Go on. Yeah. And so when we look at this analysis for Gant, you said that your guy just has a warrant, you know, whatever it may be. When we look at Gant, that maybe gives us the ability to search a car incident to arrest. There's a couple of Gant factors that come with this. One is really unique. And I think Anthony and I only know of one case that it ever took place. But the first part of Gant is you're talking about usually making a probable cause arrest for a person. Meaning, you know, that you've got new charges right now and you have reason to believe there's offense related evidence inside that car. So let's talk burdens real quick here. You know, probable cause, reasonable suspicion, reason to believe. See my hand leave the screen? Little bit lower burden. And that was kind of the justification that came from Gant is, well, if we're just calling it reasonable suspicion, we're not really doing anything. We're lowering this burden. So the first Gant factor is you have arrest for a person and they are under arrest, not restrained, and within lunging.
Hold on, Mike, I hate to interrupt you, but I think you might be adding some confusion.
Because
you're talking about the search for evidence exception.
And then you're
mixing in the safety the other factor,
right? Yeah, it's kind of talking about both Gantt factors.
That's right. Let's just talk about, can he search it under that second prong, which people call it the second prong, which is the search for evidence under the reason to believe, yes or no?
No.
Because why? Because it's a warrant.
Because it's a warrant. You don't have any reason to believe this warrant. There's nothing going to tell you that I've got a reason to believe that there's offense related evidence inside that car. There's nothing going on that you can articulate that's in there that's going to help this warrant.
Okay. What about if the warrant was issued for drugs this morning?
It's still the warrant has its own probable cause. Kind of in a nutshell, you know, the four corners kind of concept there, that's the warrant. The probable cause has been established. Now that could be a factor to help you maybe articulate the probable cause to go, you know, down the Carroll doctrine is my thought on this. I still think that under Gant you don't have that offense related.
Okay, so let me just kind of clean this up if you don't mind, Patrick,
because
you know, there's two prongs to Arizona versus Gant in 2009. Right. It's safety or evidence. And safety is, you know, Michigan versus Long is part of its prodigy, you know, I don't know what's the right word, but anyway, but it's part of this analysis where they're unrestrained near the vehicle, under arrest at the time of the search of the vehicle. You know, that never happens.
Except
get rid of that. It's only happened one time in the last 10 years.
Right. So it doesn't happen.
It involved a paraplegic man.
Yes.
Now the prong two is what Mike said. Going back to your question, the answer is no, because there is no Gantt, but there's also no inventory. There is no inventories are based on community caretaking, which is, you know, South Dakota versus Opperman. There is no community caretaking rationale here. The government has no interest, you know, to get into this person's car to search it for valuable items when the car is being given to somebody who can take it and wants to take it, and there's no community caretaking rationale. You also have, based on the fact you have no Michigan versus Long, protective sweep for weapons. So, and you also have no Carroll, you have no PC. So you have no PC, no community caretaking, no armed and dangerous, no evidence-related search under Gant. We're not in that car. It has to go bye-bye. And the thing, Patrick, you know that evidence will go down the street like that, right, my friend?
Right.
You know drugs will walk and guns will walk, but that is... as you, I'm sure you totally agree, that's part of living in a free society. that sometimes the bad guy wins every once in a while, unless we have the reason.
Okay.
And I know that that pains a lot of cops out there. Like, no, wait a second here. I'm just going to let this thing go. There's got to be a way. You know, like, I think Amanda threw out there, well, there's the way. Amanda had the way, you know, the first part of crude, consent.
Yeah, but, well, that's exactly right.
Yeah, those other factors that we went through. I mean, you hit all kinds of different doctrines, and none of them apply in that circumstance.
And real fast, I don't want to belabor this point. Let's move on to another call. But I want to say one more thing. You can always take the person away for their warrant, and the person who has the car, ask them for the consent. They have common authority, and that also is a very common tactic that cops use, and it usually works, but not always.
I have a question though. So, but if you ask the passenger, they can only give you access to what they have in the car, right? They cannot give you access to the whole entire car, correct?
No, they can probably give you access to the whole entire car. I mean, how many times has that happened? I mean, cops pull over people all the time with their driving their friend's car, right? And cops want, sure, there could be some stuff off limits, right? But what would be off limits? I mean, can the passenger open the trunk? Can the passenger, I'm sorry, not the passenger, could the driver, the friends, right? Could the friend open the trunk? Could the friend open the hood of the engine compartment? Could the friend open the air cleaner? Because maybe there's, you need to change the air. I mean, when people give their keys or screwdriver to somebody to drive their car, they're taking a risk that person is going to go through their car. And if they don't like it, don't give your keys to somebody.
Okay.
Or put limitations on it. But those limitations would have to be known to law enforcement. They would have to be like, hey, I'm driving Mike's car, right? Which is a real beater, by the way. Actually, it's not your car was the beater. It's our boy Chance.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not your car. It's Chance, our other instructor. Have you ever been in Chance's car?
No.
He started with jumper cables. So the guy's like, he has a good retirement. He's just, he doesn't spend money on cars. Anyway, I digress. But the point is, look, I lost my fucking track. I say my stupid jokes, but you get my point.
My truck's as nice, as clean as yours.
Your truck actually is pretty clean. I don't know. I totally confused you with Chance, our other instructor. Anyway, Patrick, you said, did we answer your question though? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off topic like that.
Oh, yeah, he did. I would just, basically just relinquish authority of the vehicle, basically, to the passenger, and he is good to give consent, basically.
That's right. It's called apparent authority, and he looks like he has apparent authority. So there's no reason to believe he couldn't get into the spots you want to. Now, I will say, if there is a bag that belongs to the driver in there, you could probably get into it, too, unless he puts stipulations on it. But be careful. That wouldn't have to be maybe a little more litigated. Like, why are you going through the driver's backpack that got arrested that didn't want to take him with him? But it's still not black and white.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. All right. So somebody says, Sajan, I would love for Sajan says, and it just went to me, can you explain more on inventory? If you can release to a passenger, you're protecting the driver and the registered owner's belongings. I would love for people to get on this and talk this out, but look, you're not helping them, right? You're not, there's no legitimate community caretaking interest when you are inventorying a car that is being released on scene to somebody that's taking it. The government does not have the interest. The center console, the Rolex, and the friend steals it. Whose problem is that? That's not our problem. That's his problem. He's the one who gave his car to his friends. And if he wants to try to do a tort claim because now his watch is stolen, good luck. It ain't going to work. He's the one that took that risk. He shouldn't be giving his friend his car to fellow tweakers if he doesn't want to take that risk. Okay. All right. Let's do... you're welcome. So who's on? Naomi. And I'm going to turn on. Okay. So Naomi, you should see on your mic, on your screen, you should see, hey, talk.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can, my friend. What state are you from?
I'm from Ohio.
Nice. Can you also share your state or your agency?
Yeah, that's fine. I work for the Holmes County Sheriff's Office in Holmes County, Ohio.
Awesome. All right, what you got, my friend?
So I'm in police academy right now, and I just have like a general, it seems pretty simplified, but what would be, obviously when you guys started this, it probably seemed like a lot of information coming at you. And what would like simplify all of this? Because I feel like it comes down to each circumstantial situation and that it's just all within the scope of if you can articulate the fact. Is that safe to assume?
That's a very good statement. I can tell you, if you can articulate things, you're what, 90% there, Mike?
Absolutely.
Actually, I should not even be getting involved in this conversation because you have the absolute expert on this. Mike is an academy instructor and has taught thousands of cops at one of the finest agencies in the nation. Mike, take it from here.
Yeah, Naomi, it's a little overwhelming, isn't it?
Yeah.
it's a lot. And between the two of us here, probably, and there's not a day that goes by that we don't read stuff, converse, send each other text messages. It's an ongoing thing, which is kind of why I think we love it so much, because it's not just settled. It's always stuff going on. But you nailed it, though. It comes down to specific, articulable, individualized, fact-specific, circumstance-specific situations. Every call you're ever going to go on when you finish the academy is going to be uniquely different. We have to extract all these pieces and put those factors together. And I think the fact that you already kind of get that, it shows that you've already got it locked on.
Well, look, Mike, she's here in a pretty high level discussion. Right. That shows that she will be a chief someday if she's that interested. You know, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So I got to tell you, I think my friend Josh out of Illinois actually brought up the three golden rules. I think the three golden rules plus crew is a great, if would you agree, Mike, if just in general, if a cop had muscle memory on three golden rules plus crew, they pretty much are going to start making the right decisions?
I mean, we revamped the whole thing that I'm doing and I just started it last week and we've already talked about the three golden rules a bunch of times and the acronym crew a bunch of times. It's foundational. It gives you the guidance.
Yeah. And Naomi, let me just tell you what those are, because I'm going to assume that you don't know what these are. So first of all, the three golden rules, these are just guidelines. And it's just, you know, what makes good case law, right? Now, I mean, because you know that when you're dealing with search and seizure, you're dealing with the gray a little bit. I wish things were more black and white, but they're not. And so now the first golden rule is you actually said it, the more you articulate, the more reasonable your actions are likely to be viewed. Courts really just want these cops to explain to the judge, like, why are you doing this? Like, a domestic violence example is a good example. You will be on plenty of DV calls and you will be in people's homes without their consent, right? But it is always nice when you can, you know, during the call, kind of after the call, really just debrief and be like, hey, what got us into that home, right? The husband did not want us in that home, but why do we push past him? Debrief it. And it's articulation, because the wife called and he's out of breath and, you know, domestic violence are dangerous and she needs our help. And, you know, and so just articulation, right? The second golden rule is the more serious the crime, the more reasonable actions are likely to be viewed. That is always a factor for these courts. And we actually talked about it. Were you here I think you were here for the webinar, right? Anonymous tips?
I wasn't able to.
All right, Rick, cut her off. So
nice knowing you, Naomi. Geez.
Yeah, geez, you know, you're winning me over. So the thing is, the reason I brought that up is because I talked about anonymous tips. Now, generally speaking, you can't really stop people for anonymous tips. When I say anonymous tips, I'm talking like people you have no idea who it's from, like a piece of paper arrives at the police station and Mike Boone is selling drugs, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you have an anonymous tip that says, hey, there's gonna be a school shooting in the morning, and the guy looks like Mike Boone, right? You're going to be able to stop Mike temporarily, because it's such a dangerous thing that they're accusing. And I'm not saying you can do it all the time, or there is a thing called swatting where people lie about crimes. But I'm just saying, like, generally speaking, the courts are going to be more hesitant to say you can't make a attention to find out that that's true. Does that make sense? Because it's dangerous.
Yeah. And that makes sense.
Yeah. And the final one is kind of the one that's, you know, not as powerful as the first two, but it's something to just keep in mind is, conduct all warrantless searches and seizures in the same manner as if you had judicial pre-approval. Now, I mean, you're as a police officer, you know, you're going to do 95% of your intrusions on people's privacy and liberty without a warrant. You're not gonna ask for permission. You're gonna ask for forgiveness, right? You're gonna, hopefully the judge will agree with you. But just remember that whenever you do something without a, you know, without a warrant, you don't get any extra power than you would have had if you got a warrant. And I guess a great example is this: is have you learned about the motor vehicle exception yet?
Yeah, we're actually talking about arrest, search, and seizure tonight. I just got off class and just got on here, and I'm driving to work right now.
So. Okay, good. Look, I don't want to, you know, I know you, if you had to hang up, you got to hang up. So the last thing is, look, just remember, like, you know, you don't get any extra power than if you would have went to the judge first. And the best example I have for that is the motor vehicle exception. If you believe that I stole an iPad, right, from somebody at school, work, you can't, and then you search my car for the iPad because you have probable cause. You can't search my eyeglass holder for the iPad because that's a scope issue. So it's just those things. And then finally, crew, whenever you do a search or seizure, you have to have consent. You can ask people for the consent. Reckon's exceptions, motor vehicle exception, officer safety with articulation, or a warrant. That's a lot to digest. So, but I just want to throw it out there. Just maybe start planting those seeds.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, Rick wants to send you something, probably our Ohio search and seizure book. Can you... Can you in the chat? Can you text or no?
Yeah, I can text.
Naomi, we'll let you go here, but can you email or give Rick your email or Richard at Bandier, you know, bluetogold.com? Just look for Richard. Email him and he'll send you something. Okay.
Okay, I can do that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. You're welcome. All right. Who else has something? Shane says, don't text and drive. Like, you don't do it, Shane. Shane is, who does he think he is? He's full.
Just texting and driving right now.
Dude, all cops text and drive, unless, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe some people are offended by that, but I know that they do. Yeah, and Shane.
Strip club.
Hey, Shane, don't you have a question or somebody else had a question? Do you want to ask a question, Shane? Since you're doing nothing and, you know, taking the taxpayers' money. All right, make one up. All right. I like Shane. Mm-hmm. My boy Shane. He's also a long-time listener, you know?
Yes. Not a first-time caller.
Hello.
Hey, Shane.
Yeah.
Man, I can hear you.
Good deal. Excuse me. With Texas Tech Police Department in Lubbock, Texas.
All right.
Here in Texas, we have the come and take it flags, the cannon and stuff like that.
Right. Yep. Or come and take it. Yep.
So if someone were to steal one of those, can that really be considered theft?
you said, come on, take it.
That's consent, man.
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, dude, that's awesome, dude. That is a straight up, you know, that's a straight up, you know, that's a defense. That's called a affirmative defense.
What I would plead.
Oh, that's a good one. So what do? You working tonight, Shane?
I am until midnight.
Yeah, we got going on over there. Anything interesting tonight?
No, not really. We had finals finished up yesterday and graduations this weekend, so it's pretty dead around here.
Well, look, you know, now is your bread and butter, like, does your agency, like, man, it's to me, like, when you're working for a university, right, your bread and butter in what you are an absolute expert at is active shooter. Would you agree with that? That's like your core competency right there, right?
We try to do a lot of training in that. Yes.
Yeah. Cause, you know, UNLV, you know, for my hometown, Vegas, they had an active shooter, last week. Come and take it. That's awesome.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah.
But they had a really good response, man. You know, I don't know how much I can say about it. I'm sure all with public information anyway, but one of the UNLV officers is a absolute true hero. Right, Mike, from what you know?
Absolutely. I think on scene within just a shade over a minute, I think, out there on scene. So, yeah.
And took a headshot?
Yes.
And she was in plain clothes too, right?
Yeah.
So no vest, whatever. She's an absolute hero. Took awesome. that guy out, and I'm just like, that's... And,
from what I understand, he had at least 9 or so more magazines strapped to him, so he wasn't done.
Yeah. So anyway, man, I appreciate you, man, and I appreciate you getting on, and hopefully, Hey, Rick, Naomi left the email. And I appreciate you. And you always hear, you always give great comments. And I just want to say thank you since we're talking live, man. So hopefully I'll be back in Lubbock. And I think Texas DPS, depending how full the class is, they're going to hopefully open it up to outside agencies. So get back into that class and we can break bread again, man.
If I can get in there, I'll be there.
All right. Well, email me either way. We'll talk. All right, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right. Bye. All right. So who else? Does anybody have anything? And then, okay. Who else?
Another one. Another one.
And another one. Okay. Patrick. It didn't,
Is that Patrick again, right?
Yeah, Patrick. All right, let's go. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm. Can you guys hear me?
What's up, Patrick? Sir. Welcome back.
Hey, sorry. It hasn't been bothering me all week, so.
No, you're not bothering us, dude. What's good? What you got?
So it's kind of like a three-way question. So like the first one is, so let's say, you know, a suspect that has an arrest warrant, right? Mm-hmm. You go to his house. His sister answers the door, but you saw him get in the house. And you see him in the house. Can you go in and make that arrest?
And I'm sorry, I do have dementia a tad. Just what state are you in? Let's make sure.
California.
Okay, California. I was gonna say that, but I just want to make sure because I don't wanna because there is a anyway, there's a few outlier states out there. I just want to make sure I give you good advice. But Mike definitely knows the answer to this one.
Oh, yeah. So it's valid arrest warrant, correct?
Yeah.
Mike, you were talking about this today on our little group chat.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. You know that's his domicile, his residence. That's where he lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you said California, so we're talking about the Ninth Circuit. So Ninth Circuit requires a probable cause that they're home. So you saw him?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good to go.
Okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you can go ahead, Patrick.
Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You can push right past the sister, you said, right? You can push right past her. So okay. The case law really that courts refer to is a case called Peyton versus New York, where New York cops, actually based on a statute, by the way, told them, do you know that there was a statute that told them that they can do this?
Yeah, that was the original discussion, right? That they said, well, to stay our state law says we can do it.
That's right. So in New York, what happened was back in the day, in the early 80s, they had a law that said that you could actually enter a home to make a felony arrest, essentially, without a warrant. Well, the problem is that conflicts with the Fourth Amendment, right? Because you have to have more than just a PC for a crime. You have to have agency, right? So he was a murder suspect. They did it, and they found evidence of the murder in plain view. But they did say in that case that other ways could get you into the home, including an arrest warrant, since it was basically judicially approved, right? In other words, when the judge signs an arrest warrant, are they also contemplating that there would be an intrusion on the person's home, right, to take them in custody? And that's kind of like the idea, and the answer is yes. Now, those arrest warrants do not work on third-party homes. That's why Mike asked if it was their home. Does not work in private offices where they work. That can be problematic. It's because the judge did not contemplate their business office. They contemplated a private business office, right? They contemplate their home. And so there's your answer. So absolutely, you could go in there. And, you know, some states, just remember, does California have a nighttime clause requirement? I think they do.
I think they do. I think it's 10 p.m. 10 p.m.
Yeah. I think, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, don't forget things like that. That can kind of jam you up a little bit. You know, the knock and announce or the nighttime clauses. You know, Nevada is 7 p.m. really, really early, and most states are 10 p.m. But you get my point. You're right. Going to be okay.
Okay. And then
early Nevada.
Yeah.
Early. And the second question is, so same scenario. You know, the suspect has an arrest warrant, and, he thinks that his friend's house. And you knock on his friend's house, his friends answer the door, and you're like, hey, his name is Jones. Is Jones here? He's like, no, he's not. But then you see Jones walks by. Mm-hmm. Are you going to go in there and make that arrest?
No. No. And, you know, because here's the deal, the good news and the bad news. The good news is that you are not violating the fugitive's rights. The fugitive most likely does not have standing to contest the entry at his friend's house because he's not an overnight guest, right?
Right.
He's just hanging out playing the Xbox. But whose rights would you be violating?
The friends.
That's right, because you have no consent. You have no agency with the facts that you've given me. There's no eminency of anything. Mm-hmm. And you have no warrant, and either a search warrant, which you probably would need here, or you have no arrest warrant that's valid at a third party's home. That's why when, since you're in the Ninth Circus, you would need probable cause that that is his domicile.
Yeah.
Well, you clearly don't know it's his domicile. And so the problem with these cases, Patrick, is sometimes you'll find cases that say, oh, you can do it. We, you know, and they're all talking about suppressing evidence of the suspect, but it's not the suspect. That's the problem here. It's the home, it's the homeowner, it's the friends. And the problem I worry about is that cops go into that home, they get into a tussle with the friend, the homeowner, and now we're paying a lot of money because he got hurt and he had a right to repel an unlawful government invasion of his home.
Okay.
I mean, this ain't the Third Amendment, you know what I mean? Quartering soldiers, there's no war going on. So I had to throw that in there. It seems kind of nerdy, but the point is, that's a great case. That's a great question. And it does happen a lot,
mm-hmm.
But cops are violating the Constitution when they do it.
Got it. Okay. And then the final question is basically kind of like the same scenario, but just like a scenario question. So, you know, there's a murder suspect and you kind of like find out through a post that he posted that he's at this location. He has an arrest warrant. And he's staying at a homeless shelter.
Yep.
And you go over there, you knock, and a bunch of homeless, you know, people answer the door.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay, hey, this is person here. Mm-hmm. Can I come in? And they're like, no, we're not police friendly. You cannot come in.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really have stand because they each have their rooms. And you're mm-hmm. telling them, no, I'm coming in.
Yep.
And they're like, no, we're not police friendly.
Yep.
You're like, no, I'm coming in. So you push your way through.
Yep. Yep.
And you get inside and you go where the suspect is. You open this, like these doors kind of like propped open. You see him yep. in there.
Yep.
Open and make that arrest. Is that yep. good?
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah. We need yep. to say he's back to that. That's where he lives.
It's his domicile. And the thing is, like, you know, that is that's lawful. I mean, you know, that's really Patrick. That's a very similar situation as mm-hmm. if the person was living in an apartment with, let's say, three bedrooms and there are three different people. He's one of them. And one of his roommates say, you're not coming in, right, to arrest my friend. We're not police friendly.
Right.
You can still push in. Now, again, we teach the law on this channel. We don't teach tactics. I don't want a cop getting killed because they're not using good tactics. Okay. Right. Sometimes it's yeah. good to call the cavalry. But that's besides the point. That's his home. And the friends cannot keep you, the roommates cannot keep you out of the common areas in order to access his exclusive area. That is, that you have an arrest warrant. So his domicile has already been contemplated by the judge. That's why you're going in.
Right.
Yep. Good. That's a good one too. And so, you know, and you might actually be able to hit him with 148.
Right.
Because you're giving him 148 obstruction in California. You know, mm-hmm. you're giving him a lawful order. And he, right. these people cannot physically keep a lawful, a cop with a warrant out of the home, right?
Right.
So you might have a 148 issue too.
Okay.
Yep. Actually, I'm trying to do my laws here. Isn't it PC 62 or 68 is also physical obstruction? Anyway, I'm trying to sound smart right now, but there's actually two obstructions. There's 148 and there's like 60 something. Who knows what that one is? It's like 62. It's like a different type of obstruction where it's like physical obstruction, even more get jammed up. All right, yeah. What else you got? Anyway, Patrick, if you find out what that is, you let me know on the chat.
Okay.
We good?
I think it's 69 or something.
69. Okay, cool. I knew. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Something like that. It's a PC 69. And Valerio's saying it's like a felony. Nice. Man, I'm trying to act smart. I'm not saying it's exactly what's happening here, but I know it's another form of obstruction that may be in play here in California.
Thank you.
Okay, buddy. Nice job, man.
I'm kind of curious. So it's got to be some sort of physical obstruction for.
I think it's like this physical thing. Right? Like 148 is your general obstruction, you know, hindering, right. delaying, right?
Right.
But the 69 one is just like more serious. Yeah, I think it is. And Valerio, is that sound about right? It's like more like a physical obstruction. Maybe. And if I'm wrong, tell me if I'm wrong, but that's why I kind of remember it. All right, let's go. Okay, Valerio saying correct. Alex. Alex, you're up on deck. Let me turn on your mic. Hey, Alex, as you're kind of warming up there, and just make sure if you can tell us your state and your agency, if that's okay. We'd love to hear what your agency is. What you got?
Yeah, afternoon, gentlemen. Question for you from Arizona. Work for the Arizona Game and Fish Department.
Nice.
Working through a couple of scenarios right now for training for some of our new guys. And multiple part question here. And the premise of this question revolves around trail cameras. Are you familiar with trail cameras, game cameras?
Oh, yeah.
So that's where we're at. And I'll start walking you through the scenario. I can post it in the chat too for folks. Not sure if it'll let me post that much, but scenario, you're somewhere where you can lawfully be, open desert, no structures or curtilage anywhere nearby.
Yep.
The place where anyone can lawfully be present. There are trail cameras there that are without question being used as unlawful devices to aid in the taking of big game, deer, you name it.
Okay.
The cameras are placed over an illegal bait site. You have
illegal, you said illegal, right?
Illegal, correct. Yeah. Illegal bait site. Okay. You have ample probable cause to believe that the cameras contain photo evidence of wildlife violations.
Mm-hmm.
The cameras are not permanently installed. They are strapped to a tree or a T-post. The cameras are in plain view, no effort to hide or disguise them. The cameras are capable of being locked, but the cameras are not locked.
Locked physically or digitally?
Locked physically.
Okay.
Questions for the scenario. Is there an expectation of privacy to the trail cameras? That would be the first question.
Mm-hmm. You want me to try to take this one, Mike?
I mean, I'm just going to use it as a cell phone analysis, right? The camera itself, you know, it's accessible to us, but maybe in the internal data inside there, I mean, it's not abandoned. So I feel like there's still, even though it's used for illegal stuff, there would be that probable cause. I feel like the internal, the data is not accessible. The camera itself is.
So here's the deal. I do think that a person has a reasonable expectation of privacy in the camera. And we can have a good debate because they're involved in illegal activity. But, you know, but we don't ever see cases that, hey, if you are using a device for illegal activity, you don't have privacy. If that was the case, you probably wouldn't need warrants that much, right? So sure. And we know also, well, we don't know, but I think we can make the argument that, and there's not a lot of case on this one, and I teach a lot of wildlife officers and conservation, environmental. I teach a lot of them. In fact, I've been teaching a bunch this week because I'm in South Dakota and they're in my class. And they come up all the time, right? These trail cameras. I got to tell you, like, I don't think they're also abandoned. Because I can get you on a stand and you'd be like, are trail cameras like part of hunting? Is that like what people do with hunting? And they're like, yeah, they're very common. You go pick them at Walmart and there's no reason to believe that they're not coming back for them, right? They're in good repair and so forth. Okay. So I think that the answer is that based on maybe just what, you know, reasonable expectation of privacy, I think they do expect privacy. You know, I think they do expect that these photos are not going to be used for their another hunter, you know, and to help them, they're there to help them out. And so I think that's the first answer. If I was giving you advice on this based on my limited knowledge and limited case law here, I think that you should assume that they are private, that they're protected by the Constitution.
Agreed. And that was basically the decision that we came to on that question. Is the search of the contents of the camera reasonable given the circumstances? So that's not the digital evidence, but that's to actually open up the camera to pull out the SD card, say to look for a name on the SD card or to see if there's a name inside of the camera.
Look, that is a search, right?
Yep.
If the first thing is, does a person have a reasonable expectation of privacy? If the answer is yes, because it's not abandoned, and you know, now look, do not think for one second that their criminal activity is not going to play a part, right? Putting a camera in an illegal part is going to be a very important factor that may diminish their reasonable expectation of privacy. So let's just go through that real quick, okay? So reasonable expectation of privacy is a two-part test. It comes from a case called Katz, you know, Katz versus the United States, 1967. The first thing is, Would a reasonable person believe that they expect privacy, like they're doing what they can to keep their stuff private? Well, I mean, look, I mean, you know, you can debate this, but the trail camera is not like showing the world what's in there. It has a cover on it. It doesn't have a screen that shows whatever it is. But this, so I think yes. I think I'd lean towards yes, but I'm also, you know, maybe a little bolder. And the second question, is this something that society would also deem reasonable? That is probably the best argument in your favor, by the way, because there may be a lot of judges out there that say, look, you're putting trail cameras up illegally. Yeah, you shouldn't expect privacy. You shouldn't expect that the game warden is not going to come over and start searching that thing to find out who the hell is violating the law. God, that's a tough one, you know? But let's just say that it is
trespass.
Well, look,
trespass argument.
Look, you have to have kind of like a privacy is still kind of intertwined a little bit with trespass.
If you don't have that, then you don't.
Correct. If you don't have any kind of privacy, then you shouldn't have, then who cares about the rest? So the next thing is, that's right. So let's say you do have privacy, and I'm going to lean towards yes, because it is, I do like what Jack says, when in doubt, get a warrant. So let's just say that the better argument is that there's privacy. And Amanda says, would society recognize this reasonable, leaving a trail cam behind? The reason I say yes, Amanda, is because all the hunters do it. They all do it. Yeah, sure. This is not legal here, but hunters are doing it. There's thousands of these trail cameras, right, Alex? They are done legally. I mean, they're lawfully used.
Yeah, obviously, so in Arizona, we just recently changed the law here in Arizona to where Arizona bans the use of trail cameras in the aid of hunting. The sticky part to this question is trail cameras can be used legally for other things here in Arizona, viewing wildlife, security for your property, all of those other things you can legally use a trail camera for. And that's the sticky part.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I think I'm going to change my position here then, Alex. And I see that, you know, we have Mike got lost in the, look, I'm going to say though, I think the better argument now is because there's a law that these cameras should not even be used. You know, hold on a second. Mike is texting me. There he is. So look, Alex, Mike, just real quick, can you hear me?
I'm back.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes.
Alex said, you know, change the facts, change the answer. Alex has said in Arizona, you cannot use trail cameras for hunting. And I got to tell you that to me, I don't know why. Maybe I'm intuition here. You can use them for other lawful purposes. You can use them for security of your property. You can use them for viewing wildlife, but you can't use them for hunting. Now, here's my viewpoint, Mike, and you tell me what you think here. I think that this changes everything for me. Because
the objective point of view, I think, changes.
That's right. It's society part. So society, it's like, hey, look, you know, you have a law in Arizona that says that you can't be using this for hunting. And now, Alex, okay, good. Okay. So now, Alex, going back to your scenario, if you reasonably believe probable cause level, like, you know, fair probability that camera is actually being used for hunting purposes and not just watching game because of the way it's positioned, maybe you have carcasses in the area, whatever you guys do for huntings, right? If you believe that is actually being used for hunting, I think the better argument now is that it's not reasonable expectation of privacy because they should not be doing it to begin with. I mean, in other words, even if it was illegally placed, that's probably not enough, but the law doesn't allow it.
I agree.
What do you think, Alex?
No, I agree. And that's the part that we're back and forth on, right? Because it is a legal device. So we know that's, you know, say hypothetically being used illegally, you have enough justifiable NIST to say that without a doubt, this is used for illegal hunting. It's not one of those other viewing for security of your property or viewing of wildlife in general. It's you can articulate for a fact, based on the scenario, that it is used for illegal aid of hunting. I don't think that's where we're back and forth. The expectation of privacy, unlocked, open, illegal device.
I'm going to say no expectation of privacy. I mean, you know, I just want to say, like, just because you use something for illegal purposes does not mean you lose your rights. Using a car to commit a bank robbery does not mean that you lose your expectation of privacy in the car. However, there could be some situations where you're just doing something so illegal, like the car itself, the way you're using that car is so illegal that you can lose the expectation of privacy in the car. So that's a bad example because I can't think of an example with the car. But I do know, having a backpack and leaving it at a crime scene, I do know that that's, you lose your expectation of privacy on that, abandonment and so forth. So, Jesus, dial up over here. Why don't you tell your little girls to get off the damn TikTok so you can actually have a professional conversation. Man. All right, Alex, so that's the first step. I think under these facts,
what in the hell?
I think that if you could articulate that you had probable cause that the trail cameras is used illegally, that you could open it up and look at the for the owner's information. That could be a search if they had privacy, because that could be a trespass, but I don't think that's going to work.
Okay.
What else?
I think that the only other part of this would be, do these answers change if it is private property versus public property? Mm. And, however, not legally posted.
I think it changes.
Open Fields doctrine.
I think it changes. That to me, now you're getting into other issues. Mike, you're trying to get on another. But I think.
Yeah, I think we're okay now. Hopefully.
I don't like it, Alex. I'm sorry. Like, it goes back to, it's just what objectively is reasonable, with society. Having that trail camera on a public place where you should not have it and it's used for legal purposes, right? But it is on your property now. I don't know. I would not do it. I would get a warrant.
I agree. And that's why we created this scenario and, we challenge other officers with it and seeing the different viewpoints. And it's good to see it from a legal side as well.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I love teaching the thin green line. Maybe you bring us in, because we teach a lot of, cops and that do what you do around the nation and so forth. So, just putting that, because you guys sometimes don't get, enough training sometimes. Like, you don't have guys that like me that love, some of these special like situations we talk about, your special authority, your inspection authority and so forth. So maybe call me up one time. Bring me down.
We've tapped into your Phoenix classes here in Arizona quite a bit.
So, oh yeah, cool. That's great to hear. And then that means that you went to John Wien's class.
Yep.
That's
much,
awesome.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, awesome. All right, my friend. All right, we got one last call. And Alex, you have a good night. I'm going to disconnect you. We have one last call is Sajan. And Sajan, get ready to come on. All right, and then this is our last call. And then we're gonna call it a night.
Hey there, it's Sajan in Wyoming. I'm a state trooper here.
Cool. And Sajan, and then where are you at, my friend?
In Wyoming, Wyoming Highway Patrol.
Oh, nice, man. Awesome. What's up, brother?
So, in a vehicle pursuit, hypothetically speaking, a phone leaves the vehicle and you determine that there's one occupant in the vehicle. What's the kind of grounds for identifying that phone? One, for to see whose it is to return to the owner, but also because there is a crime versus like hot pursuit at that point.
Now, where is this phone? Was just like, so when, how'd you find this phone? This phone was thrown out the car, or was it just like in the car when
on a motorcycle, and the phone basically fell out of the riders. Yeah, like legit happened, like fell out of the
No, this is a good one, actually, because the phone, he didn't throw it, he didn't get rid of it. It just fell off of him while you were chasing him.
Correct.
Okay, I have I think I have some good advice here. I want Mike to, it did fall out. So that's going to, kind of affect the answer a little bit. What do you think?
I heard like every other word. It sounds like inadvertent abandonment, if that's what I think I heard.
Yes, it is an inadvertent abandonment. Sorry. That's blue to gold. So he was fleeing right from the troops and the phone fell out. And if your internet connection is not good enough, I can answer it, but I'll try to answer
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm catching parts of it. So go, you.
Right, okay, look. So most courts, right, are going to say that this phone is abandoned. And the reason why it could be lost, like there's lost property and abandoned property, right?
Uh-huh.
Lost property is protected by the Fourth Amendment. And lost property is where somebody like leaves something behind, it falls off, you know, somebody, whatever. But the thing is, courts are very reluctant to give a privacy interest to an item that is dropped while they're committing a crime. Does that make sense? Like, they shouldn't expect it. Like, why? That's that two-part test. Remember the CATS test? Mm-hmm. Like, you're committing a crime. You're fleeing the police and you drop stuff. What would a reasonable person probably think is going to happen to their stuff? It's probably going to search it, right? And society is not really going to recognize a lot of privacy interests and stuff that you, evidence that you drop while you flee. So the first thing I'm going to go for, I'm going to teach you, is that is abandoned property. And so you can search it under abandoned property. I do have a case out of Texas where a guy was involved in a shooting, and he accidentally left his phone, on a car. And the police data dumped it without a warrant, even though they had plenty of time to get a warrant. And the court in Texas upheld the data dump. Why? Abandoned. The second reason that we're going to uphold this search most likely is under exigency, right? And that's what you actually talked about. Like, I want to find out who this guy is, right? So what I think is that cops can look in the phone and try to look in the phone and see who this person is, right? Who just ran from us? Here's the problem. That exigency only lasts as long as the exigent circumstances exist, right? So if you're data dumping it and you can't get into the phone because it's password protected, you're going to lose the exigency after a few hours. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
So I think you're in the phone. Any other questions?
And would you say that's access to the whole phone or just until you verify who you think the owner would be?
Well, look, if it's abandoned, it's access to the whole phone, right? Okay. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like they shouldn't just maybe abandon their phone. But if it's exigency, it's only enough to find who the person is. So what would be the best practice? The best practice would be to kind of split the baby in the middle, as they say, and just find out who the person is through their Facebook account, through their text messages, right? Or, call 911 and see who the subscriber info is. And then after that, shut it down and get a warrant for the rest if you need it.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
That'd be the best. You're welcome, Troop.